Okay, we're going to call this meeting to order at 6:30 p.m. Is there any public comment regarding any closed session items that have been agendized? Seeing none, we are going to go into closed session to discuss the expulsion of four students, a remittance of two students, and then we'll be back for a regular session at 7 o'clock. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 7 p.m. If you please rise, we'll have an invocation. Is there anyone here who would like to offer an invocation from the community? Mrs. Polis, would you offer one?
Dear Lord, be with us this evening as we make the decisions that affect our students' lives. Be with the family in El Monte who lost a fellow board member. And be with all of those in the district that were affected by his death. In his name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in a pleasure of flagging. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Mr. Spence.
Here.
Mr. Fox.
Here.
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 Mr. J.
Here.
Here.
Okay, report of action in closed session. The board did take action in closed session. It was moved by Mrs. Polis and seconded by Mr. Cox and approved to expel the following pupils from the school district. Eduardo Arguello for violation of Ed Code Section 48900, Subsection C, possession of controlled substance. Brandon Arzio, violation of Education Code 48900, Subsection G and L, theft and continued defiance. Vicente Guzman, Jr.,
you're violating student privacy laws by naming the students. Please use the student numbers.
Well, actually, state law actually does allow for the reading out of names.
Privacy laws.
State law does actually allow for the reading out of expulsions. I mean, I'll go ahead and do it this time, but state law does actually allow for the reading out of names. So,
we will.
What you're talking about is a conflict between two different laws, but federal, state law, and we have read them out before at board meetings. It's been up to the president's discretion in the past. But that is for violation of Ed Code Section 48900, Subsection C and D, possession of controlled substance and continued defiance. And then student number 183372 for violation of Subsection 48900, Subsections G and L. And the vote was 5-0. It was also taken in closed session January 12th. To allow the following students who have completed the terms and conditions to return. It was moved by Mrs. Polis, seconded by Mr. Cox. Students numbers 135291, 135295, and 179181. And those expulsions were lifted. The vote was 5-0. Okay, we are on presentations. Vine Elementary's first. Ms. Casile.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bertrand and Company.
Yes. What can I say?
Good evening, Board President Spence, board members, Madam Superintendent, district staff, guests, and Vine family. My name is William Bertrand, and I am the principal of Vine Elementary School. We are very proud of our work last year, which resulted in a 17-point API increase. While we are on the right track, we know we still have a long way to go, and we are committed to the journey ahead of us. I am here tonight to convey to you our professional development plan to increase student achievement. At Vine, we are committed to developing students who become successful, lifelong learners, and productive citizens. To accomplish this, we must focus on engagement, alignment, and rigor. We believe that students must be engaged in their learning. They must understand what they are learning, why they are learning it, and how it affects their lives. Our lessons and the materials we use must be aligned to the state content standards and the district essential standards. We also know that appropriate levels of rigor must be attached to the lessons we create and facilitate for our students to be successful. To effectively move forward, the Vine staff understands we need to look back. To do this, we analyze our data. This year, when we looked at our CST data, we found that for the first time in the history of our school, our population of white students ceased to be a significant subgroup. They were replaced by our English learner population. In looking at this slide, you can see the 17-point API increase that I mentioned. And we also see that over the last several years, we haven't progressed as far as we would like to have. But we are encouraged that we are moving in the right direction. We are thrilled that our populations of socioeconomically disadvantaged students and our students with disabilities are at an all-time API high, and that each of our significant subgroups is on the rise. In this slide, we examine our English language arts data. And you will see that school-wide, we've made growth. Each of our significant subgroups have also made growth, which I attribute to the hard work of our professional learning communities. We really examined the ways in which lessons were being facilitated and students were being assessed. When we discovered a disconnect between our assessment practices and the CST, our teachers worked together to overhaul some assessments so that they were more in line with the CST. For example, Vine's third grade professional learning community, or PLC, took the traditional spelling assessment, where a teacher calls out each spelling word and uses it in a sentence, and replaced it with an assessment in which students had to identify the correctly spelled word out of a list or possibly a misspelled word. In looking at our mathematics data, you will notice again that school-wide we have made progress. Each significant subgroup, with the exception of our English learners, is at an all-time high. Now, this caused us to pause and wonder. While they made growth, what was keeping our ELs from attaining the growth that our other subgroups made? And what we believe is that academic vocabulary plays an important role. Our students learning English know basic words, so it is important that we amp up the vocabulary for them. For example, our ELs would understand a question in which they were asked to provide the answer to a math problem. They might not understand the term product, quotient, or sum. So teachers are making certain that they introduce this academic vocabulary and continually use it so that our EL students, and all students for that matter, really build their vocabulary and have that additional ammunition they need when being assessed. Earlier you heard me allude to engagement, alignment, and rigor. These ideas form the basis for Vine's goals this year. All students will be engaged in their learning. For this to happen, we believe that all students must be treated with respect. We must know students well so that we can inspire them and push them when necessary, as well as know when to pull back. I'd like to illustrate this by using one of our students with special needs as an example. By knowing this student well, his teacher knows when she can demand more of him and when he is at his limit and she needs to adjust her practices or her approach. For students to be engaged, they must be empowered to take an active role in their learning and in their leadership abilities. We must give them opportunities to share their ideas. Students must also have hands-on opportunities to make meaning of their learning. They must be up in front of their classrooms making presentations. They must be conducting experiments. Last year, Mrs. Polis helped our fourth graders out as they spent a morning learning the ins and outs of pioneer life, how early Californians panned for gold and sharpened tools, churned butter, and ground wheat into flour. This is something they're going to remember forever. All instruction will be aligned. Teachers will work in their professional learning communities to ensure that the lessons they facilitate are aligned with the state content standards and the district essential standards. Now, this requires a paradigm shift for a lot of us. We cannot rely on the publishers of our textbooks to determine that the lessons in their books are standards aligned. Instead, we must look at the standards we are teaching, determine how we will assess mastery of those standards, and then create lessons that prepare our students to demonstrate mastery. The text is a tool in teaching the students, but not the sole tool. We may need to project an image of a primary source document, such as the Declaration of Independence or the Bill of Rights, on the front whiteboard using our newly installed LCD projectors. Thank you very much. Or we may need to play an excerpt of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech to help our students make meaning of concepts. Learning will be appropriately rigorous. Each grade level is using appropriate materials. For example, we recently enrolled a new third grade student who speaks very little English. We will not use kindergarten materials to help her master the English language, but rather we will find appropriately leveled materials that help build her foundations in English while she's mastering the ELD and third grade standards. Similarly, all students with IEPs will have IEP goals based on grade level standards. Oh, I hit the button too quick. Don't look at that one. Don't look at that. Additionally, we must work to examine the lessons we facilitate to ensure that they are what we can be referred to as not Crayola curriculum, color, cut, and paste. I would expect a fifth grader to be standing up in front of their classroom making a presentation about the founding of our country as opposed to designing a book cover for the Boston Tea Party. We at Vine are very proud of our accomplishments this past year. We're also very proud of our colleagues at our sister schools who have made incredible gains. We salute our friends at Merced Elementary School and hope they are enjoying having that top API score outside of San Jose Edison, because next year, now we change the slide, Vine is determined to surpass Merced Elementary School's API score and become the highest scoring school in the district. But how are we going to do that? We're going to build teacher knowledge of the curriculum. It's important that teachers share their thoughts, experiences, and expectations of the curriculum with one another. They must know how to use the various texts, computer programs, and technology pieces that are being provided by our district. We are working to deepen our understanding of the standards. If we do not understand these standards, we will not be able to facilitate lessons that effectively address them, nor will we be able to effectively prepare students for high-stake tests which assess mastery of the standards. We are continuously analyzing data to inform instruction. We look at CST data. We look at benchmark data. We look at trends in the data to determine what we need to reteach to help students master concepts. We use data to build our intervention classes, to set our goals, and to measure our success. We are broadening our understanding of significant subgroups. It is important that we know how to reach and support our English learners and our students with special needs. We must come to understand that as a community changes, we must change with it. To effectively combat the achievement gap, we must adjust our teaching to meet the needs of our ever-changing population. What worked with our students of yesterday may not work with our students of today, and what we're doing today may not meet the needs of our students of tomorrow. We're also building a repertoire of best practices to share with the members of our professional learning communities. We're working on opening our doors to one another, planning together, and sharing our successes and failures with our teams. The professional development timeline allows you to see how we're working to meet our goals. September was devoted to data analysis. In October, we re-examined our Standards Plus curriculum and learned how to use assessment data from Standards Plus to inform instruction. In addition to examining our school culture and beginning a book study of Stephen Covey's The Leader in Me. In November, we spent time learning how best to serve our English learner population. December saw us working on student engagement and learning about 21st century skills, those skills necessary for students to be successful in the 21st century, setting goals for oneself, analyzing and creating information in a variety of forms and media, and acting responsibly with the interests of the larger community in mind. We are continuing student engagement throughout this month, learning how best to meet the needs of all our students, including those students with special needs. And next month, our focus will shift to curriculum alignment and the standards, really building that strong foundational understanding of the content standards. We'll finish the year off by cycling back through the data analysis, student engagement, and rigor to meet needs of all of our students. Now, we understand the task before us is formidable. I've been really impressed with the dedication of my staff. We have all come to realize that in the past we've rested on our laurels, and we are committed to putting in the hard work we need to move forward. Through it all, though, we feel we need to keep our heads and a sense of humor. So I leave you with this slide, which our PTA selected a theme of Hollywood at Vine. And In our auditorium, they constructed Hollywood, the man's Chinese theater. So here's our staff of celebrities and fans alike in front of a Chinese theater. We appreciate the help of the district and the board as we work to move forward. We feel we are very fortunate to be a part of the West Covina Unified School District, and we look forward to working with you as we help meet the needs of our students. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have questions?
You talked about the what you were doing with the special education students and the IEP. And you were making sure that their goals were aligned with the standards.
Correct.
What articulation is there when they transition from grade to grade in between the teachers to make sure that the goals are appropriate for the next grade?
Correct. Our RSP teacher works with that. That's a really great question. You know, typically built into the IEP process, when a student transitions from one school, let's say from our school to Holland Crest, that transition is built in where our teachers will meet with the RSP teacher at Holland Crest. At our school, our RSP teacher really facilitates meeting with the current grade teacher, going over the goals that they've met or haven't met, what needs to happen for next year, and then meeting with the new teacher. The district has incorporated like a quick look where the RSP teacher actually fills out a list of how the student is performing and what the student goals are, and can hand deliver that to their new teacher.
Okay. And then you talk about differentiation and ensuring rigor.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that for the high-performing student?
You know how I do that? That's the question that I ask my teachers, too. How are you ensuring that our high-performing students are getting that differentiated instruction? I talk to the kids. I talk to the parents. I have a really, I believe, good relationship with the parents, and I can say, are your students getting that differentiated instruction? Do you feel that what they're doing is of a higher caliber? And I give them examples of what I would expect to see. One of my favorite examples is if you were putting together a brochure of the rainforest, if that was the goal for all of the class. Those students who are at a certain level will put together just a brochure detailing examples of the rainforest. But our higher students, our high-achieving students, should really be taking a side on this issue of the rainforest, deforestation, and then put that into their brochure. Why this is a good thing or a bad thing. We meet with the teachers. We talk about what they're doing. If I'm not seeing that differentiated instruction in there, then we have a conversation about what they can do to amp it up for those students.
And then how are the parents made aware of how it's being differentiated for the higher performing students?
The higher performing students. Those students who are in the GATE program, we have a meeting for those parents. We talk about differentiated instruction and what they should be expecting to see in our newsletters that we send home. We talk about differentiated instruction, that's something that all parents should be seeing, because it's not just for those high-performing students. Students who are struggling, the instruction needs to be differentiated so that they can meet their needs as well.
Well, and I understand, you know, I know not all students are in special ed, but I know what that looks like and how the parents are informed.
Yeah.
You had a lot in here about the struggling student, but I didn't hear a lot about this.
Our GATE students.
Right. And then how that works. So I appreciate you explaining that to me.
Sure.
And giving me the example.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.
Oh, you coward.
Next, we have the professional development plan for West Covina High School. Sheriff Gotro, somewhere. There you go.
President Spence, members of the board, Ms. Castillo, members of the cabinet, pleasure to be here this evening. Like Will, our goal is to be the top scoring comprehensive high school in our school district. Now, going to go ahead and took you a minute, Steve.
That was from what I said.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's way funnier than you are.
I didn't set the bar real high, did I? Okay, pleasure to be here this evening and share with you where West Covina High School has been the past year and where we plan on going. First of all, I'd like to introduce Mr. Stanley, Mr. Perez, Ms. Louie, and Mr. Despar, who are members of our management team. They are a spectacular team, as are our counselors. Our teachers are wonderful. And our support staff. We're very fortunate to have the personnel that we do have at West Covina High School, all 230 of them or so. Okay, I'm going to start out by showing you a little data, and this is really exciting. When I came in here last year, I was the new kid on the block, and basically I got to show you the data and show you how everything was going the backward slide. Well, this year we've turned that around. We're going to start with our AP results. Now, for a comprehensive high school, West Covina is one of the top AP programs that you're going to find. Now, first of all, you can look at the growth in the AP program. And despite the slide in CST scores in the past, one thing that's happened at West Covina High School before I got here was the increase in our AP level program, and that's continued. You can look at the increase since 2006. The total number of students taking the exam is the first slide, and that's increased from 231 kids in 2006, almost doubling to 2009 last year. An increase of 26% over just a one-year period, which is phenomenal growth. Well, so the total number of exams also increased a like percentage. Now, in 2008, when West Covina High School had 745 exams taken, the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine take a ratio of the amount of AP exams with the number of your senior students, and based on that, they have a list they comprise, and it's called the top 5% of high schools in the United States. Well, in 2008, West Covina High School cracked that for the first time when we had 745 exams taken, and we were around the 980th school, best school in the country. And what's interesting, if you look at this list, you don't see a whole lot of comprehensive high schools. What you see are a lot of charter schools, a lot of private schools that, you know, really cater to a different clientele than just, you know, your typical comprehensive high school that's pulling from all socioeconomic demographic backgrounds. So 745 tests got us in the top 1,000 in the country. We've raised that to 946. So it'll be exciting this winter, spring, when that list comes out again to see how much higher we've moved up this list of top 5% high schools in the country. Now, the bottom line is the number of threes or better. Now, realize a score of 3, 4, or 5 on an AP exam correlates to quote-unquote passing the exam. Most colleges will give you credit for that class once you've passed the exam. The tests are basically graded, or they're weighted so that approximately 50% of the kids that take it worldwide pass the exam. So 50% is kind of the benchmark to get 3, 4s, and 5s. Well, we've moved up to 486 kids getting a 3 or a better, and that's approximately 53%, 54%. And so what's exciting is when you see that kind of growth in the amount of exams taken, typically you'll see a nosedive in the amount of passing, because typically the schools aren't ready yet for the kids to have raised their level that high. Well, not only did we raise the amount of tests, but we raised in a like percentage the amount of kids passing those tests. So that's very, very exciting stats. Next is the California High School Exit Exam. As we know, an incredibly important test, actually the most important test for high schoolers, being that it's tied to the high school diploma. Again, you can see our growth. As you know, you take it one time as a sophomore, and that's the first time you take this exam. So we like to look at those statistics for the first time we take the exam. We want our kids passing the first time so that they're done with it, they feel good, the parents feel good, and they can move on to other aspects of high school and not have to worry about the exit exam. So you can see that in 2007, we had 80% of our kids pass math for the first time, which, by the way, is a very good pass rate. We've increased that all the way up to 87% pass rate for the first time. You can see the state average is 77%. So we're 10% higher than the state average for first-time pass rate on math. English, also up to 88% pass rate. Again, huge growth over the last year and 2 years, and that's, again, 9% higher than the pass rate for the state. So we're very excited about this. Finally, this is the information that didn't look so great last year. Looks a whole lot better this year. Last year we had a 2008 school-wide API of 726, which had declined for 2 years in a row. Last year we brought that up 22 points, up to a score of 748. 22 points for a comprehensive high school is a huge gain in 1 year. You can see that all our subgroups also increased. Most importantly, our socioeconomically disadvantaged increased 26 points. Our special ed population, 14 points. I did not list the EL population, as we had some wrong data because we had the RFIP kids were not included in there. So it was comparing apples and oranges, so I didn't put that data in there. However, that being said, we realize that our EL population, other than our special ed population, is our most at risk, and we need to do better there, even though we did have nice gains and across the board in our API scores. School-wide goals. Now, this is very, very ambitious. Our goal is to increase by 5% the amount of kids that score proficient and advanced in every single CST, and to decrease by 5% the amount of kids that score below basic and far below basic in all CSTs, and that includes school-wide and our significant subgroups. To give you an idea, we have about 2,400 kids taking the CSTs, the STAR tests. That equals about 120 kids into proficient and advanced and 120 kids out of below basic, far below basic. I calculate, and I'm probably off by about 3, 4, 5, 6 points one way or another. That raises our API about 30 to 40 points. I mean, that would be very, very aggressive, very, that would be very nice. You know, we raised it, what, 26 points last year, so if we could come in and go another 30 plus, we'd be smiling, you know, even bigger than we are now. To get there, our professional development plan, and realize that some of this is redundant from a year ago, but we still have a ways to go on what our goals were for a year ago. First of all, a year ago I talked about the concept of professional learning communities, PLCs, and we're trying to get our entire staff into that mode. Among other things, that includes aligning our curriculum, and really it starts with what are called essential learning outcomes. Essential learning outcomes are what we decide that we feel it is important for every child to know when they graduate West Covina High School. And that includes what it is that's important for them to learn in every single class, every single core class. Some people call it power standards. Some people call it must and wants. We call it essential learning outcomes or essential learning standards. Also devising common exams, common expectations, common grading expectations, not only amongst classes, but also amongst departments, and hopefully eventually among the entire staff. Now, those three things are what I call the skeleton of any school, and that's the curriculum. Now, a year ago, I stood up here and said that that was our goal, and Mike, you said, you know, we kind of hear that every year. That's every school's goal. But, you know, what I'll give you is that a lot of schools talk about that, especially high schools, but almost nobody really does it. It just sounds good. But I can guarantee you almost no high schools truly are aligned, have truly gone in and decided what their essential learning outcomes are and gotten buy-in from the staff, have truly agreed to align that and all follow the curriculum, let alone have all agreed to do common exams, common expectations, and common grading. That is a huge, huge undertaking, and almost no high schools do it. We're already there. We've got a ways to go, but we did a tremendous amount of work last year, and with your help, bringing in the company Edgenuity that gave us a lot of time and a lot of direction, we've really created a framework, and we need to keep on that and keep moving in that direction. Then what goes along with that is the data-driven curricular instructional decisions, looking at those common exams, common formative exams, and making a decision what that means and now what we're going to do with our curriculum and what we need to do differently, what we need to do differently with our instructional practices to make sure that all kids are understanding and learning the essential learning outcomes. That's huge. We're getting there. We've got a ways to go, but that's something we're going to keep working on. We also do a great job, I think, of sharing best practices. We've used our staff meetings now to literally do in-servicing on these three areas, differentiation of instruction, student engagement, and checking for understanding student feedback and what that looks like. Ronnie leads a group of teachers that volunteer to go in and do peer visitations, where they literally go in and do peer visitations and then debrief afterwards and talk about what they witnessed, you know, what that means to their practice, what they do differently in their classrooms. And again, for a high school, that's a big deal. Teachers are pretty much used to just being in their room and they don't want anybody in there. And to get to the point now where we've got peer visitations, and that's a credit to Ronnie's leadership, and people feel comfortable with that and we're able to utilize that to our advantage is a big deal. So we're going to continue on with those things as well. Thinking maps. We're really excited about thinking maps. This is something that we talked about a few months ago, and then we found out that our middle schools are going in that direction. So we're going to piggyback on them and steal off of them because they're a little ahead of us. What we have done is we have sent our teachers that are going to be the trainers of trainers, and they've gotten trained. Now we're going to, again, steal off the middle schools and go to them as they begin the process this winter and spring, and our goal is to implement in the fall. Also, literacy is one of the things we work incredibly hard at. We actually have a literacy team on campus, which is one or two individuals from each core area that get together and meet and bring in service and bring ideas into our staff meetings. And the big one's on the bottom, WASC. It begins. This is the big one. This is our six-year review. Next year by this time, we should be just about ready for our visitation. So in the next year, we're going to have to to really saddle up and take care of all the things that you have to take care of WASC. Typically, you'll see a high school, that's all they're going to do for a year is WASC. So we've got a pretty ambitious schedule here because we've got a lot that we are moving on other than just the WASC process. Here, just to break it down a little more for you, which is basically what I just showed you. Again, identifying the core curriculum, aligning the curriculum, common formative assessments, common expectations, common grading. Again, the next step, using the data to drive those decisions, sharing best practices both in staff and services, in classroom visitations. This is something new, CPM training. CPM, and again, I thank you folks for stepping up and giving us the resources to purchase the CPM. CPM is, for those that don't know, is college preparatory math. It is a different curriculum. It is a different way of looking at math, which is very important. I mean, math is literally a foreign language for those of us that are not math teachers. It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating for a lot of kids and a lot of parents. CPM is a method that pulls you away from the traditional drill and kill of math that so many of us don't like math because of that. And it's a method of teaching math that really is conceptual and teaches you the concepts, teaches you the math instead of the hardcore drill and kill. It also does a great job of spiraling concepts throughout the course. And a lot of schools have had a lot of success with it. We brought it in this year with your help, with the resources, and we've brought it into algebra and geometry. Our teachers are psyched. We go in and we talk to the kids. They like math again. We hope to be able to move that on to the Algebra 2 level next year. That involves a lot of intensive training. Because it's a different way of looking at math, the teachers actually have to go to 8 training sessions a year, full-day training sessions, 5 of them in the summer, and then 3 of them at the end of each quarter. So it's very intensive because it is a different way. We're basically retraining our math teachers. Again, writing across the curricular area, content literacy that are very important across the board for us. There's our thinking maps and, again, our WASC preparing for our 6-year review. I'd also like to show you real quick, you know, that when you've got a comprehensive high school and you've got close to 3,000 kids, any school for that matter, as you know, a large percentage of kids function very well in a comprehensive setting. But there's a certain amount of kids that have difficulty. And so we're trying to create a safety net for all those kids. First of all, our students with disabilities, some things that we're doing this year. First of all, again, thank you. With your resources, we were able to add a psychologist, this is with your resources. We have a 160% position, which is 2 people. So we have additional psychologist help. The other thing is we took our college advisor, and again, with your help and blessing, giving us the resources, changed that position into a counselor. With that, we created a special ed counselor who only works with our special ed population. Instead of having 7 counselors and, you know, they've got all kinds of other things on their plates and it's hard to become an expert at everything, we've got somebody we feel is dynamite that is an expert on special ed. We feel she's a huge pickup for us and basically creating this situation where we have a special ed counselor and clerk. We basically kind of reorganized our front office, so we created a position that's just working with this individual to better service our kids and our parents. The workability coordinator we have at our school, Jill Sahinuk, we feel is also huge. She does a great job. Based on the needs of our students, we have the collaborative model, but we also have some pull-out classes, and it's based on what the needs of our students are. We also have the case management section for our teachers, which, again, helps them to better service the needs of the students, the needs of the parents, stay up with the law, make sure that we're doing all the things correctly that we need to do. And also directed studies classes for those students, which a lot of high schools don't have. We feel that's a very important component. The last two, I think, are 2 of the most important things. These kids are doing the same curriculum as our core department, and they're doing the same common exams as our core department. So they're not doing a watered-down curriculum. They're not, you know, jumping below the bar. We feel that you know, with some exceptions, that most of these kids can come up to this rigor, and they deserve for us to offer them that rigor and have that opportunity to be able to perform where their colleagues are performing. Our English language learners, we fund through the site an EL coordinator. Next year, we've had so much success with the special ed counselor, we're going to just have one of our counselors focus on EL next year. We feel, again, that will really help to service our EL population. Our EL course is by level. Last year, we had more of a heterogeneous mix, and I think it was tough to service the kids when you had all levels in one class with 30-plus kids. So, again, with your support, with Lily's support, we've been able to add some sections this year. We have almost twice as many EL sections, meaning much smaller classes, meaning that we've been able to level these kids or put these kids in a more of a homogeneous mix, which makes it a lot easier for the teacher to meet their individual needs. The district also provided an in-service here that we were very impressed with, and it introduced us to a company that has some CELT workbooks, testing strategies. So right away we went and we purchased those, and we're going to start incorporating those. And again, these kids are getting the core curriculum and the core assessments with all of our regular ed students, and we feel that's important. A lot of schools pay lip service to that, but very few actually do it, and I speak to high schools when I speak to that. A few other targeted populations, because we do have some kids that don't qualify for these services, but there's still kids that can fall through the cracks, so we're trying to meet their needs. First of all, we have AVID. AVID, as you know, is basically geared towards kind of the middle-of-the-road performer who maybe isn't really enthused with school, doesn't necessarily see themselves going to college, but absolutely has the potential. We've got an AVID coordinator at our school that we're funding. We've got quite a few counselors involved with that program that are very into what's going on with the AVID. We have a great group of teachers that are involved. We have an AVID class for each one of those students where they learn study skills. They're talking about colleges. They understand the application process. They're getting very specific tutoring to what their needs are. I was in an AVID class the other day, and I walked in, and we had four, and here's the exciting part. This is a junior AVID class, and these are the kids that typically would not be performing, you know, given if they did not have intervention. Junior class, there were about 22 kids in there. Six of them are in this corner with a tutor, and I asked the teacher, Sam Sanford, Sam, what are they doing? Well, those are the kids in honors pre-calculus. This is a junior class. There's five more. What are those? Those are the kids in regular pre-calculus. Half of these kids were in pre-calculus, which means they're all going to calculus next year as seniors. Had about six right in front of me. Those are the kids in Algebra 2, which, again, is a junior, not bad. And there are about three or four in geometry. That, to me, right there spoke to the success of the program and what we're doing. We have that 9 through 12. They also go through college field trips to, again, get them thinking that I'm going to college. There's not another thought process. They're all going to college. They're all going to succeed. And then with this, with the core group of teachers and counselors comes increased parent and student communication. Finally, something we started this year, and I stole from my old high school. It's an acronym called SWIS. Stands for School Within a School. You know, all the years I was teaching, I'd have my special ed population, I'd have my EL population, and they were getting serviced. So I could communicate with their case carrier, the EL teacher, and know that between the two of us we could work out strategies. Then I had my kids that were not serviced by either, and they were low performing. Either they weren't enthused and you couldn't get to them, or they just, you know, didn't necessarily have the God-given gifts or the background or whatever. And there was nothing for them. And that always really frustrated me. So when I got to Covina High School, they had this program. And I thought it was just awesome. And we worked on expanding it there, so we brought it to West Covina. Basically, what we've done is we've taken the 80 students who are not getting other services that are having difficulty performing coming out of the middle school. And we put them together in a smaller learning community called SWIS. We have four teachers and one counselor. So basically, you've got a 5-adult-to-80-student ratio. So what you've got is 5 adults just bird-dogging 80 kids all day, every day, communicating with their parents, meeting weekly. The kids aren't performing. They call them in. They're on them. They're following up with their other teachers. The classes are smaller because most of their classes are in the small learning community, although they've got two or three outside of that as well, so they're with the regular ed kids. They have their own skills class. Their elective is a skills class where they're learning language program and literacy skills. And again, with this comes increased parent-student communication. So we're really excited about this. We're going to look at data at the end of the year to make sure it's being successful. Assuming it is, because on the surface it certainly looks like it. And again, students, parents, kids are reporting that they're loving it. We want to take that and bring that to the next level next year into the 10th grade. So what we're trying to do is create an umbrella for all the kids that aren't necessarily serviced by federally mandated programs. With that, we're open for questions.
Questions? Steve? Any questions? Kami?
The special ed test for the high school exit exam, do they have to take it this year?
what the law is, and somebody jump in here if I misspeak. My understanding is the law now is they have to take it their sophomore year if they want to get a high school diploma. Then they can IEP out their junior and senior year. As long as they IEP out, the IEP team makes that decision, and they've met all the other requirements of the West Covina Unified School District. That's my understanding. Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But we're excited they still have to take it their sophomore year. You know, I think that justifies a lot of the things we do. I think it justifies, you know, a little of the, you know, the fire under them to get them going and the rigor that we're doing and the teachers getting together. One thing the Casey's done is it's really forced math and English teachers to get together and collaborate like never before and talk about the needs of these kids. So I think it's been really good for that because the stakes were so high, as you know, with that high school diploma.
Well, they could petition.
Correct. They can IEP out after their...
Even before that, they could have done that.
With the modifications and accommodations, so. If they got to 350. But now they don't have to do that.
Okay. You were talking about the common exams, expectations, and grading.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how that's coming along and that how do you ensure that all of the teachers have the same expectations of students?
It's tough. And, you know, what you have is, and you have a lot of problems. First of all, regardless of who comes to me in Algebra 2, they came to me from 10 different teachers. It is crucial that these kids come to me with the same skills.
Mm-hmm.
So the common curriculum, the common exams. And the common exams because basically a teacher's going to teach what's on their test. So if we can have them doing common exams, that's what now is important to them. That's what they're going to teach. But an important component of that is also the common expectations and grades. One teacher may say, well, I'm going to give you extra credit. Another teacher says I'm not. This teacher says, well, I'm going to score this test a certain way. If you do the problem correctly but answer it wrong, the steps correctly, answer it wrong, I'm going to give you extra credit. So what that does is you get this huge skewing of grades. And the grades really give us the indication of where to place the kids. And placing the kids properly is also huge. So we've had these conversations and then the common range of grades. If you have these common exams, but if I'm giving 20% of my grade is those exams and 80% is yours, our grades are totally different. So to the credit of our teachers and our leadership in our departments, they have had these conversations, and they're hard conversations. These are things teachers hold dear. You know, my grading, my expectations, my way of doing things. We've already gotten to the point in a year where in math, the entire math department has a range of, I think, about 70 to 80% on exams, which is good. I mean, that may sound like, well, shoot, that's 20 or 30%. Not. You'd be amazed how many teachers, 20, 30, 40% of their grade is really performance, and the rest is stuff, you know. We've gotten to that point in math, and that, to me, is the most crucial place to have it. And English is not far behind, and those, I feel, are the two most crucial places. We're a little further behind in science and social science, but we're going to keep prodding them along and getting them to that point, because we have to.
Right. The fees for the advanced placement exam,
mm-hmm.
is there, if a student can't afford the test, but can... you know, has all the ability to pass it, is there a way to have those fees waived?
Absolutely. First of all, for each exam bought, there's an $8 leeway in there that goes to the school to help us with administrative costs, renting tables, chairs, et cetera. What we use it for, first of all, if the child comes in and they're under the federal poverty level or if they're on free and reduced lunch, they get a fee waiver. That being said, if they have none of the above, if any child, and everybody on our campus knows this, if they come in and say, I just can't afford it, they're going to take the test. We're going to pay for it. We're going to take out of our monies, and we're going to make sure those kids can take the exams.
Great. The CPM
uh-huh.
training, you were talking about how great that is, and but Algebra 1 is supposed to be in our middle schools.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have that same program? And that might not be the question for you, but it would be really great if they had that, and you were hoping to bring that on to Algebra 2. That if they got that in the middle schools.
And yeah. I know they adopted a book, and they adopted a different book. I know that the middle school teachers were very impressed with the Algebra 1, but they ended up going with a different model, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because you do have, even though Algebra 1 is an eighth grade standard according to the state, obviously we have a certain percentage of kids that just don't. And it's great in coming in now, it's a new experience. If they're going to have to take Algebra 1 again, it's kind of nice that it's a new experience instead of the same old book I was in last year on board stiffness. Now it's like, wow, this is a new method, a new strategy, a new school. And so in a way, I think it's kind of a good thing. Not that, you know, it wouldn't be great if the eighth graders were also in CPM math.
Okay. You were talking about the special education students and all the services available.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of reading, and they're really saying what a difference technology makes. There's nothing on this list of the technology available for your special education students as accommodation as they're taking the core curriculum.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. One thing that I asked for coming in, and again, the district's done a great job of stepping it up, and I think we're almost there. Approximately 50% of our campus, if not now, very shortly, will be wireless. And why I've asked for that is it's much easier to get technology in the hands of students when you're wireless. You can get laptops that are cheaper than the workstations, and you get what are called CALs. They're portable charging stations. So anyway, I've worked with Mike Willingham, and I know that he's already done the library. I think he's done one of our wing of portables. What I've done is for him, I've isolated where our special ed students are, where our EL students are, where our Swiss students are. Those will be wireless shortly if they're not already. My next step is then to buy the laptops, buy the charging stations, so that teachers can put those hands instantly into the hands of their students. What we will then do is there's a cottage industry right now of online programs. When I was at Covina High School, we used something called Renaissance Place, another something called Plato. There's Carnegie Learning. There's so many companies out there now. And these are great companies. They basically put the kids through an interactive program, and it's a tutorial. The kids can go online, and the teacher can isolate the strands they want to work on. The kid goes on individually, and, you know, it's got all the bells and whistles, so the kids are stimulated, and it takes them through a pretest. The pretest then determines where their areas of weaknesses are. Then it forces them into tutorials and doesn't allow them out of that area until they can meet the standards set by this program. Then they can move, yes, mastery, thank you. Then they can move to the next level and the next more difficult strand. And so that's what we're looking at. That's what we did at Covina High School, and that's what we're looking at doing here, and we think that's going to make a huge impact on, again, these populations we talked about earlier. I'm glad you said that. I forgot to bring that up.
Do we have Reed 180 at the special ed at the high school level?
Not currently.
Okay. So that's sort of like the next step, because when you talk about what's happening at the middle school and then what's happening at the high school, they chose on purpose to have different math programs. But in special ed, they wanted to see what would happen at the middle school level to then transition those kids into more technology at the high school. However, we know that there's more technology than just a laptop, and we recognize that there are different types of disabilities that need different types of technology. So that's something that we're all going to conferences to learn about.
Great.
And, you know, again, you guys have stepped up. And I'm not just saying this. I've been in other districts, and I will tell you, and I'm not talking about the district I'm a school board member in, but the districts I've been administrators in. I have not been at a place where I have been able to ask for things, and there's the fire under people to do it for us and to meet these needs instead of finding all the reasons not to. And so it's kind of like I've asked and I've received, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. But one of the other things we're looking at is accelerated reader for those special ed kids, the EL kids. But we also, and I should have said this, we've got LCD projectors now in almost every single classroom. We've got the document projectors in almost every single classroom, and those have helped a lot in terms of differentiating and giving those kids other modalities of learning and engagement as well.
And, well, some of the things I've been looking at is like the Kurzweil Reader, and I know you had that at the high school, and it wasn't utilized to its full potential. So it's written into a student's individual education plan, mm-hmm. but really not utilized. But you've paid the money for it. So I'm hoping that Dragon Speaks, people are talking about special education students now using iPhones or iPods as assistive technology. Mm-hmm. And in the last three articles I've read, they were saying that actually was working when they did tests, it was working better than speech. And I'm not taking away anything from other people, but the extra counselor, the extra speech and language therapy they were getting. The list of other things they're saying, if you put these tools in their hands, they're competing with their non-disabled peers mm-hmm. and doing well. And those are tools they can take on for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
So,
good. Good points. Good points.
No, great points. Just to finish on that point, though, the SELPA has held back. Some of our districts that are in the SELPA with us have refused to spend their money because they're in such bad shape. We can't get more money until they do the first wave. So Ruben and I have been going to meetings saying we're ready to move on to the high school. We can't get the matching money because other districts. So it's just recently that Ruben came back from a meeting saying that they finally now understand that they need to spend it in order to get it. So because districts are in a lot of trouble, they thought they could put the money in the bank and use the interest, and the state said, no, you can't. As you know, a lot of districts are in trouble. But it is an area where the technology is, as you say, Cammie, it enables learning in different ways, not just a programmatic type of thing. There are instruments that can help kids in a regular classroom.
You talked about the other targeted populations, the SWS. Mm-hmm. How were the students selected for that program?
Basically, GPA and test scores. We looked at, again, we took out the kids getting other services, i.e. Special Ed and EL, and then Ronnie actually went through with the counselors, and we looked at the kids, the 80 kids from the different middle schools that were having the most amount of trouble academically, and we went ahead and we communicated with the parents and the kids. I don't think anybody was opposed to it. I think they were all excited about it, and we placed them all in. That being said, the plan is, and I fully anticipate this, we'll have some kids that at the end of the first year, the teachers will say, you know what, they're good. Let's move them on, and we can concentrate a little more on the other kids because they don't need the program anymore. And that's what we saw before.
And then will you backfill?
We'll have that conversation if we have the staffing and the sections that we can do that. We definitely want to take that to the sophomore level next year and follow these kids and then integrate a new freshman class as well.
Right. That's a wonderful program.
We're excited about it. We really are.
I just had a question on the AP exams. Mm-hmm. It had been most of our teachers, every kid took the exam. You know, there are some school districts that try to raise their percentage by, they'll go around and say, you're not going to pass, not pass, not pass, pass, and that person goes on and take the test, yep. And the other four don't. But we've always generally had everyone take it. Is that still what
Absolutely.
We do?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Otherwise, yeah, that's the whole purpose of it.
Right. Okay. Good.
Well, and the other part that kept them the gate was they wouldn't enroll in there. So then when they did enroll, they wouldn't let them test.
Right.
But, you know, I'm very proud of the work that we've done at the high school, and just for the audience and the record, in coming attractions, at our next board meeting, we will have on the agenda, and we're working with Mike and the feeder schools, to develop a school outside of West Covina High School that will draw some students at the high school level who are interested in a smaller school setting. And we're going to discuss with the board the International Baccalaureate Program and some other things that we hope to do so that our community continues to have choice. Because we recognize that we have one comprehensive high school that we want to continue to give them the resources to be the absolute best school in the valley. And in terms of a high school, I believe that it will be. And I'm very grateful for the team that's here. But some of the things that you see when you're changing, when scores dip, it's like you have to catch up the staff development with the expectations. And having said all that, we pressure Mike on a daily basis that his expectations have to be very, very high. And so for that, we thank them because we know that it's a lot of hard work and it's a process. But we had a conversation, I think it was yesterday, about the urgency to sort of provide our community a smaller high school opportunity so that two things happen. Some of the portables would go away at the high school, and we would also have an opportunity for some of the middle school kids who prefer to go to iPoly or somewhere small to have that kind of school as a choice in our district. So that's coming.
Well, I wanted to thank you before you go for your efforts at the high school over the last couple of years.
Appreciate
we know
it,
what you got. We know what you got, and you've done a great job, and we'll still pressure you. We'll still keep pressuring you, but we appreciate your efforts very much.
I appreciate it, Michael.
So thank you.
Thank you.
I've had a request for a short 5-minute break, so we'll reconvene at 8 o'clock.
Monica, did you come in?
All right, I'll go to the ladies' room.
Just just need you to take a photo of me here so I could show her. Right. So, set. So it's just hit that. I think it's hit OK.
He's a friend. He was a friend of mine. I met him part-time. Four kids.
Thank you.
I got the call last night because they were trying to track down the runner. And they thought, someone thought I might have a cell, which I did.
Very good. Thank you very much.
I knew before they're married, his wife, you know, worked for another organization part of the week, worked, he got into campus. And so, you know, he was the chief of staff, you know, I went a different way. And then when I was chief of staff, he's first calling me. I mean, I've known him, every time I'm up there, I hang out in that office. And so I saw him on Wednesday, last Wednesday, but he was all that stuff, but he was gone. And there was a guy who just graduated from Sheriff's Academy playing basketball, so they got CPR right away. But it didn't matter, he was never going to be unconscious.
Oh, my God.
And the family had left about 15 minutes earlier. They were watching the football.
Oh, my God.
They left 15 minutes earlier, and then they had to go to the hospital. I have four kids.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, and then this morning, I'm like, real. Like, I kept thinking, like, someone's going to call me and tell me, no, it's not the will you thought it was. So,
that's a terrible thing to do.
So that's what it was. Oh, it's definitely that. Yeah, no, that's what's because since both of you guys were late. You know, he goes, you know, it's like, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Now people are all, oh, you sound tired, man, I don't want to talk about it. No, it's a
hard one.
Kind of stunned. I can believe it, like I said, I got like a mic in the room.
Nice talking to you, darling.
I knew somebody who was playing ball in too, but I couldn't check him out. So, that's one. 41 and 10. I assume the autopsy is going to find that, you know, some weird thing. Yep.
Sorry to hear that. That's,
yep, that's what that's about. There's state law that does require it to be right now. We had some controversies with Vladimir. And what we did at the time was we left it to the board president to decide, because I was reading it. There's a federal law that says you can't. That's a conflict. But there's never been a court case that said that, unless that's changed. So that's what it is. So that's when it came up the last time. Okay? So they'll figure it out. About a minute. I was hitting my wife and I started hitting bone. No. It was my kids. It was my kids. No, lifting weights. Strained it. That sounds better?
Yeah.
That's what I tell everybody. I started hitting bone. Yeah. Oh, from the. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it is. So.
Mike is anxious about the audience. Daughter-in-law. So I had Monica take a picture and I just emailed it to her, faxed it to her, texted it to her. So.
Very good. Just clear it out.
Thank you.
Okay. If that's okay with you. Okay, we are reconvened. Board President's report. I don't have anything to report. Board of Education, do you have anything to report?
No.
Anything to report? Anything? Anything? Student report?
Okay, I'm just going to report. Recently, last week, our students returned from winter break, so they were well rested. But this week is finals week. Some of our students took their finals before winter break, but the majority of the students are taking their finals this week. So today was our first day of finals, and we had a minimum day. And Thursday is the end of the semester, and second semester begins next Tuesday.
Wow.
And so, you know, all the seniors took their panorama today, and they're very excited. And it's halfway through the year. And in our fine arts section, drill team just came back from their regionals in Las Vegas, placing first, second, and third place in their hip-hop divisions and small palm divisions. And next Wednesday, our drama department is actually kicking off their opening night for their musical Footloose at the Baldwin Park Performing Arts Center. And also, our sports are actually starting their leagues games this week, our winter sports. And winter formal is also this Saturday. It's going to be at the ESPN Zone in downtown Disney, so we're pretty excited. And it's a four-day weekend because Friday we don't have school because it's the end of the semester. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much. And the good news is we're approving the drill team trip to Vegas today. Good news. We have one request to address the board. Ms. McGunyan?
I need to use a microphone.
Yes.
Ms. McGunyan.
Nicely, do I need
you can pull it down, though. You could
close
that. Yeah,
just close that.
Yeah,
close. I don't know whose it is. Just close it.
There you go. Good evening, President Spence, members of the board, Superintendent Castillo, and guests. My name is Marina McGunyan, and this is Mrs. Nicole Jones. And we are here tonight representing CSEA, which is Classified School Employees Association, and all the classified employees that work here in the district for you. I would like to take this opportunity to formally introduce myself as a new president of the chapter, and Ms. Jones as one of the vice presidents for our chapter. She decided to become involved, and she's a strong leader. She's going to be a very great advocate for many of the employees and the members. A little background on myself is I started going to school here in West Covina in the third grade. I went to California Elementary School. I went to Willowood Junior High when it was a junior high, and Edgewood High School when we were the Trojans.
That's right.
Good school.
And yes,
the best
was.
School. It was the best school.
And I still decided to stay, and I became employed at Orangewood. Then I went to California School, and now I'm a site supervisor for the CalSafe program. And I've been doing that for 10 years. I've been involved with the union for about 10 years also. Gary Hunter recruited me into the union. I've been first vice president, second vice president, site rep. I'm currently on the negotiating team, and I have been president before. And I decided to, with all the changes going on in the budget within the district, to just take that position again. And as president, I'm currently working on meeting with all the department supervisors and principals. One of my goals is to work together with them when a classified employee is to be disciplined. We as a team need to do two things. Is one, make sure that the classified employee is fulfilling all the responsibilities in their job, not only for themselves to maintain their job, but also for the students and for the school. And secondly, is to make sure that our union contract is also being honored simultaneously as we make sure that the responsibilities are being met. So in conclusion, CSEA looks forward to working with everybody, all parties concerned, in meeting the needs of the students, the district, and all classified employees. And I have a phone number in case you ever need to contact me. It's 626 area code 347-4839.
Now, I would just like to say something. I'm actually a graduate of West Covina High School Bulldogs. I went through school K through 12. I was the first graduating class of all Bulldogs, so I went all 4 years and was on campus with the merge. A lot of fun. but I've been an employee with the district since 93. I started out at Monta Vista, and I've been at the high school since 95. And I look forward to the next year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions or...
Thanks for stepping up to the plate.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Congratulations on your win.
Thank you.
Great. That was the only request I had to address the board. Are there any others? Okay. We'll go to the business session. Organizational. Is there anyone that wishes to take an item off of consent?
Number four. I had a question.
Number four. Were there any others on there? I need to take item number two off. So four and two. Any others? Okay, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the agenda and consent items as presented with the deletions of items two and four. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It's approved 5-0. Okay, item number two is the minutes. And I just wanted to clarify something so there's no confusion in the future. And that was on the election of clerk, item 129. If I recall correctly, and in listening to it, actually the nomination was made, and then there was a pause, but then Mrs. Shoemaker interjected that she didn't want to accept the nomination. It was granted. Is that correct?
Not that I didn't want to accept the nomination, but that I felt that, according to our board policy, I was not eligible to be in the position.
Right, so that needs to be listed there somehow.
What page are you on?
I'm looking at page 37.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I'll go ahead and approve the minutes as long as we maybe we could actually listen and use her exact words there. In there. I'll go ahead and move that with that correction.
Second.
Any objection? It's approved 5-0. We're on item number four. No, excuse me, item number three. Item number three, I brought this back because in our minutes we said we'd bring it back because there were several of us that were going to work on versions of trying to combine the two policies, the one that was presented to us that had a lot of overlapping with our current policy. That was not done in a way that could get that to us at this board meeting. If it's up to the board, but if we'd like, if we could table this the next meeting and also put a deadline on board members to get their corrections to Monica by, like, Monday, then she can go and combine the versions and do all that kind of stuff.
Monday before the board meeting or the Monday?
I was thinking, like, this coming Monday.
Oh, okay.
Like this coming Monday, that would give her a whole week actually to do it, right? Is there a motion to that effect?
I'll move to table it until the next meeting.
Okay. And that includes a deadline for board members to get that to her on Monday? Okay. Right. I'll second it. So it's been moved that we table this to the next board meeting, but there's a deadline for board members to give input as of this Monday.
Is Monday a holiday?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or is Tuesday a holiday?
Tuesday. No, Monday's
a holiday.
So we'll say Tuesday?
Monday, huh?
If you get it Monday, that's okay.
If you get
She'll
it Monday,
get it
we're
Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved 5-0. Item number 4 was taken off consent. Eileen?
I had a question. With each of, well, let's go with the first one. It sounds really exciting, and I can't wait to hear how the training goes, and I'm thrilled that we're doing this. My question was about evaluation of the program's effectiveness. How are we going to evaluate it? How often? How are they going to report back to us? Who do I address my question to?
To me.
Okay.
Okay, and you're speaking specifically of which part here?
Of the program that they're going to be doing, the cognitive strategies provided by DataWorks Education Research.
Item A.
Item A.
Okay.
So that was my question was, how is it going to be evaluated? How are we going to stand? Are we going to hear from the teachers of how they're using it, what intervals? Because it's going to be such a wide-reaching program.
Mm-hmm. Very good question. And part of this DataWorks program does bring a survey each time they go through a workshop to provide feedback. But in addition to that, I'll ask Ellie Valentine to comment on this.
Well, generally, after a professional development like this, principals work with their staff to establish how they're going to implement the program, and then principals in their formal and informal walkthroughs would evaluate whether or not the program is being implemented.
Okay, and then how do we get that? Are we going to hear it in the next presentation next year, or will there be a midway point to find out, is it working effectively?
We do the annual assessment based on, you know, phasing this in. So, you know, if the board requests to know, you know, what progress and what feedback, we could bring that forward.
I would appreciate that because this sounds really exciting. And then for item B, thank you. For item B, Vine is taking the step up to writing. My question was, are we doing step up to writing in other schools? And are those teachers who are going to be trained going to be collaborating with teachers who are currently doing it successfully in the other schools?
Yes, to both.
Okay, thank you. And then for C, I had basically the same question about, has Ms. Hamilton provided this workshop to teachers at other schools? And then are we going to be cross-collaborating with any of those schools if we have? And then the evaluation. How are we evaluating the effectiveness and the use by teachers?
You know, Tandy just left, and I'm not sure if
I know that Ms. Hamilton has worked with Lou before. I'm not sure if he was with the entire staff previously.
Yeah, I think it's been limited up until now. So I think this is like a first initiation that we'll have to look at. It was requested by them, but we'll look at it, you know, based on what we see happening and then decide whether it goes somewhere else.
Okay. I'm really excited by all these things that we're doing, and like Mr. Gautreau said, that the board has stepped up and said, let's try new things, let's do new things. My only concern is just, are we evaluating it? Are we getting the feedback? Is it being implemented?
Absolutely.
So, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Okay. Is there a motion then on this item?
I'll move.
Okay. It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded to approve the consultant services agreements with DataWorks Educational Research for instruction on cognitive strategies, Soapers West for step up to writing, Linda Hamilton Participation Works founder, further to approve budget transfers, purchase orders, warrants in support of the agreements. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? 5-0. We're on item number 12, audit report. Ms. Castillo?
Okay. Board members, as you know, Our school district has a very good, in the past few years, a very good track record in terms of the audits that we yearly have with Nigro, and White. And I don't know if you understand how that law works, but basically they have standards that they have to apply across the board, and they basically can only be part of doing this at a district for a certain amount of time. There's all kinds of regulations that surround quality audits on public funds being a really important part. And I guess sometimes we take for granted, you know, we tend to focus on the things that don't go so well, but we don't take a lot of credit for the things that do go well. And it takes an awful lot of good management and effective, efficient practices throughout the district, because as you can imagine, anyone in the line of whether it's a school secretary buying something or it's a principal or it's, you know, any parts of our organization, if there aren't good checks and balances, the audits don't come out the way ours have. And I, for one, you know, I'm very proud of the fact that our school district for 3 years in a row has basically gotten flying colors and an A-plus on these audits.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions about the A-plus audits, other than the ASB funds?
Are those... What, general accepted accounting principles? Is that what that is? That flying colors? And what'd you call it? A plus? I didn't see it in the opinion anywhere, did you?
Okay, perfect findings.
You put it into
educational terms.
Do we have any questions about the audit report?
I do.
Yes, Mr. Cox.
Only by virtue that I have to.
Do you have any?
Yeah, I'm on page 47. And
of the audit report.
Of the audit report. And this is just a thing that I've been very concerned about, just the implementation. It's the implementation of General Accounting Standards Board number 45 and the implementation over the last couple of years and how this is going to affect it. There was this huge concern for these unfunded employee benefits they're going to have. And so... I had learned also that it doesn't cover the pensions. It only covers the benefit plans, the health for the retirees and that sort of thing. So actually, I'm actually quite confused. Is actually we have, in effect, overfunded. That is that the way I'm understanding it? That way I'm reading that we have a $653,000 asset on the books where we have either funded in excess of what our anticipated liability for these funds. Is that an accurate assessment?
Not overfunded. We actually did an actuarial study, if you remember, when we came to the board analyze the future cost of OPEB, which is the future cost of post-employment benefits. Mm-hmm. Our actuary came in with an analysis at that time, if I remember correctly, of about $1.3 million that needed to be set aside if we wanted to fully fund at the time. We have three choices, if you remember. One is called the pay-as-you-go plan. Mm-hmm. It means every year you put a little bit of money, and you always put money forevermore. Most districts have chosen to go that way. Second choice is fully fund. And we didn't want to do that because now you're putting all your money up front, securitizing it, and who knows what's going to happen. So we went with the hybrid plan that was in the middle. We set aside $500,000 in the first year. Okay. And then every year we contribute to the plan anywhere between $34,750 and $100,000 to fund the future actuarial value of the post-employment benefits. So even though we have a set aside of close to $700,000, the future value of the post-employment benefits now passes more than $1.3 million, $1.4 million.
Right.
And that's taking into account that we have, if I remember correctly, 700-800 active employees and 48 retirees at this point drawing benefits, and that can increase based on the life expectancy and all that. So right now our plan is actually, if you look at the pay-as-you-go scenario, slightly underfunded. If you look at the fully funded, it's about half. Mm-hmm. Our hybrid is right on the actuarial study based on the schedule of payment.
So we don't anticipate any surprises then on this. Yeah. No, yeah. Okay. Yes. And somewhere I read in here too, as far as this our responsibility ends at 65, except for one or two exceptions. Is that it, or that's been once and only approved by the board? Is that? Never mind.
You were present for the discussions that created this fund and this.
Right, actually, there was dissenting votes.
Actualizing,
on that.
Not his.
No, but I mean there were several. There were a couple different votes. Yeah.
Not his.
There were a couple different votes when we funded it.
If
I remember right, there were a couple
okay.
different votes.
I just thought that maybe you thought that Ruben and I made this decision.
Oh no! I was no. That was
he wouldn't know either way.
That's all I have for this.
Any other questions about the audit report?
Just the ASB?
Cammy?
I thought you looked at me.
Okay.
Only two of the ASBs didn't have problems. So
Can the students from one ASD help support the other students on how to do it correctly?
Actually, that's a very good question. Do you recall last year, and by the way, I appreciate what Lily said, this is our third year of a very, very good audit.
It's awesome.
We did one thing with the auditor this year that is uncommon. We asked the auditor to go one step beyond, and that is that last part of the audit. That last part of the audit is not mandated. What we asked the auditor this year is, instead of just telling us that there are no findings, because we kind of knew since October how this was going, and I talked to Lily, we asked him to take us one step beyond in anticipation of future things and help us improve our internal controls, focusing on two areas, one-time federal monies and ASB accounting. Mm-hmm. And what they did, they said, your one-time assurances are fine. We're not mm-hmm. even going to write about it for this year. Your ASB, you really want to have crystal clear controls. You could improve by doing a couple of things, handling your cash a little more aggressively and doing a little bit more of a remittance type of control for cash. It's not a finding in the sense that we met all the standards. They found 5 out of 12 perfect. I mean, we met all the criteria, but it's like we went one step above and say, help us improve internal controls in areas of cash handling. And that's what it is. In two schools, they found that if we become a little more aggressive with the reporting, we actually would meet the standards of next year's audit.
Wonderful.
So that's what you see at the
end. We're getting ready for
that's
that.
That's why they wrote at the very beginning. This has nothing to do with the October letter. We're actually planning on next year's audit and just trying to anticipate some of the potential areas of internal control management.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there a motion to receive?
I'll move to receive.
Second? It's been moved and second to receive the audit report from Nigro, Nigro, and White from 2008-2009 fiscal year. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It's 5-0. Board education discussion. Anyone have anything? Yep. You see the dates to remember there with our holiday, January 18th, and then January 26th, our next board meeting. There being no further business, I did want to adjourn in honor of, if you look in your agenda, Jim Pitchy passed away before our Christmas break, and he was a fixture over at Edgewood on that campus, and just wanted to point that out. I know so we lost one of our noon aides at California School, Sandra Casillas, who died from complications related to pneumonia and lived by us. So I wanted to adjourn in memory of both of them at 8:23 p.m.